Welcome to the F3, Female Forward Finance, a podcast dedicated to exploring the intersection of women, wealth, and power. I'm Jill Faraday Lloyd, a financial advisor at UBS Private Wealth, and my mission is to help women have agency with their capital and to align their wealth with their values. The F3 is a space for real conversation about money, power, and everything in between. Whether you're building a business, navigating a career transition, managing family wealth, preparing for a major life event, the F3 is here to arm you with insights, tools, and the assurance to make bold, confident decisions about your financial future. Because women aren't just inheriting, we're earning it. We're building it. And we are shaping what comes next in the world. And it's time we own every bit of that power. Let's dive in. Today, I'm honored to introduce one of the strongest women that I have the pleasure of knowing, Jodi Lavoie. She's the founder and CEO of The Grief Company and Widows in the Workplace. And Jodi is here to share her deeply personal journey through loss and how she navigated managing both her family and her family businesses during an incredibly challenging time. Jodi Lavoie is on a mission to humanize bereavement support in the workplace. And after the sudden loss of her husband, Jodi recognized the need for more empathy and understanding for the grieving. And that began as coaching widows, and that's grown into The Grief Company, where she collaborates with organizations and creates environments that generally support those in grief. Through coaching and corporate training, Jodi empowers both individuals and teams with the skills to navigate their own grief journeys and to support one another with empathy, resilience, and understanding. Jodi and I met through my work with the YPO Women's Business Network. Welcome, Jodi.
Thank you so much, Jill, for having me.
I'm really happy you're here. I'd love it if you can, and I know this is deeply personal, but I think it would be helpful for our listeners to hear a little bit about your story and what motivates you today.
Absolutely. And it is. It's an extremely personal story that may surprise many of you, and I just put that as a caveat out there because people are usually not expecting what I'm going to say. So 10 years ago, I got a knock on the door. I opened it. There was a police officer, and he told me that my husband had been gravely injured at work, and could I get a ride downtown? And I said, of course. He would not tell me what happened to my husband. I learned 3 minutes later, Jill, that from a call from the press that my husband had been shot at work. Mm. And that really started everything. And it turned out my husband had demoted his chief technology officer, who came back to the office 4 days later, right in downtown Chicago. And he shot my husband, and then he killed himself on the spot.
Oh, my God.
And I know. My husband did not pass away right away, but he never regained consciousness. So for about 3 months, he was really in a very non-responsive state. And so I was managing his care. Overnight, I realized I'm now running the business that my husband had founded and was running. I was solo parenting. We have 3 younger daughters at the time who were 9, 12, and 15. All of that with grief and tragedy and fear, frankly.
Oh my God, Jodi. I mean, I don't know how you found the strength to do it all. How did you get through it?
You know, sometimes I ask myself that question, but every time there'd be a problem that would surface. And there were many. I just felt like I was playing whack-a-mole. And sometimes I would look to the sky. I'm like, okay, I've got this. And I would just check off, okay, what is the most pressing problem? Great, I got this. I'm going to solve it. Move on to problem number two. And I got very good at compartmentalizing where I was. So when I was at work, I focused wholly on work, and I knew that I had my childcare situation set up very well. And then when I was at home, I did my best to focus 100% on my girls and what they were doing. And that helped me accomplish and get through all that I had to get through.
I'm reminded by a book of a book by Anne Lamott called Bird by Bird, which is when you have a really challenging situation that you just have to tick one thing off at a time. And at some level, that feels like success, even though you're in the middle of something so horrible.
It is. And you know, my mother always said, you know, you can do anything you set your mind to. And
gotta love the moms.
I'm a firm believer in that.
Yeah. So you mentioned when you were at work, you focused on work. Let's talk a little bit about work before and after the incident with your husband's shooting.
Sure. So before this incident happened with my husband, I was a stay-at-home mom, full-time, with my girls and, of course, volunteering in the community and doing all of those things. And then overnight, here I am now running a $50 million business. I'd been out of the workforce, Jill, at that point for probably about 8 years. I didn't have a resume. I didn't have a LinkedIn. I didn't have a bio. I had none of that kind of stuff. And I firmly remember it was probably about 2 days after my husband was shot. I went into the office. I scrounged up a suit of some sort, and I talked to the employees and reassured them. At that point, I really thought Steve was going to be okay. Like, he made it through this. He was, you know, through the initial shooting, he was going to be okay. And the employees loved him. The customers loved him. And everybody that worked at that company was 100% behind making sure it was successful. Because as you can imagine, when this type of tragedy happens at the senior leadership, this was the founder, CEO, and the chief technology officer that all of a sudden were no longer able and available to lead the company. So it was tenuous at best. And the employees got on the phone with the customers, frankly, that day. And people don't think about this, but this happened in the office. The employees are the first responders to this type of thing. And, oh, gosh, I can't imagine. I can't imagine.
Well, you can imagine, right? This was your life. I mean, you were thrown into the fire, right?
It was, but I guess there's something about that visual of actually physically. I mean, yes, I saw my husband in the hospital, and yes, I saw the aftermath of all that. But the scene, I'm very glad I didn't see that.
Yeah. So here you are. You are now the CEO of a $50 million business, having been a stay-at-home mom for the last 8 years. How did you manage to do that? Did you have any prior experience running a business or handling the finances of a business?
The short answer is no. Early on in my career, I ran a nonprofit. And so, you know, I had that type of experience, but certainly nothing at this level. And what I really realized very quickly is, even though I didn't have a LinkedIn, my network of college friends, of neighbors, of community members. And they were all reaching out, how can we help? We want to support. And in so many different capacities, one gentleman offered, he's like, I've got a month-long sabbatical for my job. I can come in and I can help. And I didn't take him up on that, but just how kind, the kindness of people. So I reached out to attorneys I knew. We didn't have a board of directors because we had friends and family shareholders.
Okay.
And we had a board of advisors. And so I retooled the board of advisors because we had some gaps in subject matter expertise. So I brought some new people on board that could really help with legal aspects, financial aspects, and actually an old neighbor of mine who was an expert in selling businesses. And that was always the goal of the company, was to sell at some point. That was not the time to sell.
Right.
But having somebody that had that experience, because I had not, was really important to me. And you talked about how you and I met, Jill, through YPO, the Young Presidents Organization. I joined that. That is a group of, 35,000-ish CEOs and presidents worldwide who've done this before. And so I connected with them. I reached out to them. I was put in a small group. And that small group of mine, which they call a forum, they helped me through all the stages of step one, really early on in running the business, and then looking for a banker to help me sell the business, attorneys, and then through the entire sale process and on. I couldn't have done it without all of that extra support and that was out there. But I reached out to them too. And I wasn't afraid to say, you know what? I've never done this before. I'm not a supply chain technology expert. Fortunately, the team was supply. They are and were supply chain technology experts. So I relied on them for that. But the business, management, direction, absolutely, I looked for outside resources to help me.
Well, you had so much to learn and come to understand. And for you, it's probably like drinking from a fire hose where you cannot miss a drop, right? And so this is like one of those examples of how crucial having a network is to any CEO, but particularly to female CEOs, female founders, female entrepreneurs, is that you've got to ask for help and you can't be afraid to not know it all, right? Like, this is not bravado. This is a moment where you're like, I need help. Who's out there for me? And I really commend you for seeking that support, because that ultimately enabled you to successfully sell the business to private equity, right?
Yes, yes, absolutely. And there is a specialness of finding like-minded women as well who are running businesses. And fortunately, within the YPO organization, I was able to find that too. So for those listening out there that may not be in an organization like YPO, there are organizations out there to find like-minded women in whatever role that you are doing.
Absolutely. If it's okay with you, I'd like to talk a little bit more about financial preparedness and your relationship with Steve. Before he passed, how did the two of you manage your personal finances? Were you both involved, or did you take what we call the common divide and conquer approach, where one handles the financials and one handles everything else?
We were the divide and conquer. And Steve liked to say, I managed the P&L and he managed the balance sheet.
So, I love that. I'm going to use that.
But at the time, our balance sheet consisted mostly of the business. 75% of our personal money, Jill, was in the business. So if this business you know, was, had not been successful, that would have been extremely challenging, not only for my family, all the employees, all the shareholders. It was a huge weight on my shoulders because not only am I trying to take care of my family, but of course the family within the company. And when your shareholders are your friends and family, you don't want to let them down either. On top of grief.
I can imagine. Yeah. That's a lot of pressure. So,
it was.
So you were not engaged with the balance sheet, let's call it. I love that. What were some of the things that you had
not
to do?
At all. And I didn't know what to do, Jill. So, I guess like any, I don't know if any novice person in this situation, I asked my friends, who do you use as a financial manager? And two very close friends used, you know, a very large, well-known institution. And I thought, well, if they use them, I can use them too, and that'll be great. And so for many, many years, they helped manage my money. But I really outsourced it to them, and I would come quarterly and listen to what they had to say. But Jill, I didn't understand any of it. So that was challenging.
I can imagine because, well, first of all, you had a lot of other stuff going on, right? You had things you had to get done. You had to also, you know, by selling the business, but you also were dealing with your own grief. What did you learn about, I guess, financial preparedness throughout this whole experience?
Well, getting involved is so important. Taking that first step. Because so many, especially women, are afraid to take that first step to ask for help because we manage everything. You're supposed to know how to do all of these things. And I didn't know what to do. So certainly relied heavily on my financial planners. And then as my grief started to lift and I had more capacity, I wanted to understand, where is my money? What is, you know, how is it invested? What is it doing? More long-range planning conversations. And I certainly wasn't able to have those initially. I just didn't have the capacity for it.
Yeah. So, see, first step is ask for help. And then the second is seek to understand, right? So that you can agency, right? Because we don't live forever. And at some point, your three daughters will be the stewards of the family wealth, right? Right now you are. And my guess is that the values that you've developed over the course of your life and have shared with them are deeply ingrained about what money means to you and what it means to the world. So, I think I'd like to shift, if it's okay with you, to talk about what money means. Like, what are the money stories that we sort of tell ourselves? So, a lot of the women that I work with have these deeply ingrained money stories they tell themselves. And that they oftentimes, those beliefs hold them back from being fully engaged with their wealth. So, what do you think those stories look like? In your experience, with all this work that you've done around grief, right, what do those stories look like for women from your seat, and how do you think we could maybe rewrite them?
Sure. You know, one is, I'm not good with money, right? I never managed the balance sheet, so how would I know how to do that? And sometimes there's scarcity mindset as well, you know, and that certainly can hold you back. And, you know, confidence comes into play too. And it certainly did with me too, Jill, because heck, I'm running a business and I certainly was paying attention to our financials. I should know how to read and understand my own personal financials. So frankly, there was a little embarrassment.
Imposter syndrome. I can't believe. Yeah. Right. I have the imposter syndrome. I'm the CEO of a company, but I have no idea. I'm not the CEO of my personal financial life. How could that be, right?
Yes. And some women back burner it, right? Like, okay, I'll get that to that another time. I've got another fire over here, and I've got to hold everything together. I've got to hold my life together, my family, you know, manage all of the, your work, all of the things. And sometimes it doesn't become a priority, frankly, till it can be too late.
Yeah. What's resonating with me is this notion of being afraid to ask the question, right? I've met so many brilliant women, yourself included, who weren't or aren't engaged with their wealth because they find it hard to ask questions, particularly about money. Like you said, I should know this. I'm not good at this. You know, if I ignore it, maybe it'll go away. What do you think holds women back from these important conversations about money?
You know, it's interesting because as women, we generally don't talk about money. Mm-hmm. We were told talking about money is taboo. You shouldn't do that. I have frankly never talked to my friends about money, you know, how, except for the times when I went to them and said, you know, who are the financial planners you use? I do rely heavily on a very good friend of mine that comes with me to those meetings. But it's not something, you know, we sit around when we're out for dinner with friends and talk about. So even just being able to lift that kind of taboo topic would help immensely. And we talked about confidence and judgment, you know. Again, it's like, I should know how to do this. I'm now 57 years old. And you know, why wouldn't I have learned that earlier? And then all the stories that are in our head shut down our ability to ask questions sometime.
If you could go back to, you know, Steve being alive and everything was hunky-dory, and I know you can't, but is there something that you would have done differently in terms of your financial engagement in your relationship? Is there something you wish you did?
There's a few things I wish that I did in regards to money, and I kind of bulk estate a little bit in with that. So first, I would have gotten more involved on the balance sheet side of it. You know, prior to starting this business, he was an investment banker. So I'm like, he knows what he's doing. I'll just let him do it. But, which is great. But having me, then I didn't understand it. So being able to understand it and help make the decisions. And it's not like he didn't ask me what I felt. We made decisions together. But I feel like I could have learned and asked better questions so I understood better the decision I was making. And then secondly, when our first child was born, and at that time she was 15, we had done all of our will and, you know, all of those important estate-related documents. We'd never revisited them, Jill. Mm. It turned out we never had a healthcare power of attorney. We never had a financial power of attorney. None of that was drawn up. And we hired like a really good firm in Chicago. And that could have caused a lot of problems as I was, you know, working through his healthcare issues for the 3 months when he was alive. And so everyone revisit your documents.
Yes.
That's important.
Yeah. Especially those basic documents. Oh my word. One of the things that I admire most about you, Jody, is how you've taken your experience and now you help guide others during their time of loss. Can you tell us a little bit about your business, The Grief Company, and the important work that you're doing today with corporations to support their employees through grief?
Absolutely. So in my work, when I first began running the business, it's hard enough to be a woman in business. And then when you layer grief on it, that's a whole other flavor of work life. And I knew I wanted to help women in that space. And so when I first began work, my quest to change how people think and support about grief, I worked primarily with widows in the workplace. And I coached them one-on-one virtually on how to find a path forward after loss. And I still do that today, but I want to have my reach be further because grief touches us all. One in four people are grieving at any one time. And so I brought my work into the workplace, which is when I started the Grief Company. And I train companies, their employees, on how to understand what grief is, how to support each other in grief, and know what to say when people are grieving, and then help managers construct a support plan for their employees. Because where do we spend most of our time, Jill? We are at work.
Yeah, yeah.
And if your work environment is not supporting your grief journey, A, your productivity tanks. B, you're likely to leave that company because you're not finding a supportive environment. And your emotional health absolutely suffers. So the companies are such a ripe space for really helping to support grief and bereavement.
Well, I mean, grief isn't just the loss of someone through death. It's also, where 50% of marriages end in divorce. There's grief associated with that. A health issue, the loss of having cancer, or, a change in the lifestyle because of your health. These are all things that are worthy of grieving. And creating a society and a business that allows their employees to fully be fully human, right, is a beautiful thing.
Yes. Yes, and I appreciate you bringing that up because you're right. Grief is not just loss. And it's all of those things you mentioned, and then some, it shows up. And people don't really think about it outside of loss. So that's an important subject.
So just a couple of final thoughts and some actionable advice here. As you know, I'm focused on helping women create agencies. So what would you say to women who haven't yet started to engage with their finances in marriage or singularly, or who might be afraid to confront the what ifs in their life, right? Like, how can they begin taking those first steps today to create that agency in their lives?
Yeah, take that first step and start learning. And that's a big statement, right? Okay, great. I'll go out and learn. Where do I go? There are a lot of resources. I started small, just online. Google searching. There are online courses that will teach you these things. You can go to your banker and financial advisors and say, I don't understand this. I need you to give me a tutorial. And you may need to give it to me 5-6 times. And that is okay. And so accepting that it's okay that you might not know, but take that step to learn and challenge out there. Us women, and I know, Jill, you have an amazing fact that I would love for you to throw out. We're big holders of wealth, and it's time to embrace that and take charge of that. And you shared at that meeting we were at, I forget what the number is and the percentage of women that are now going to be managing the future wealth.
Yeah, so 30. It's projected that women will control approximately $31 trillion in our nation's wealth. That's the majority of the wealth in this country. I mean, that is a big change to what the world had looked like in the past, where women couldn't get credit or couldn't even own property on their own. We are in a moment of great transition, and it is incumbent upon us women who will have that wealth to not give our power away.
Absolutely.
So that's the message that, just thank you so much for sharing your story. It's so hard to hear, Jody, but what it does sort of warns people that everything's not going to be okay. You can't rely on somebody to take care of things for you. It's up to you to create the future that you want to have, and you can do it after the fact, or you can do it, you know, together with a partner while they're with you. Resources that I can name, right? UBS.com/women has, you know, a widows and divorce checklist. We have an investor confidence test, right? There are a whole bunch of resources at UBS that is a good place to start if anybody is listening to this that needs to hear this message. Get started. Don't be afraid to ask questions. There are no dumb questions to things you're learning for the first time.
That's right.
Thank you, Jody, for sharing your story and for the incredible work you're doing to empower others. If you'd like to learn more about Jody's work, you can go to thegriefcompany.com or widowsintheworkplace.com. Fantastic resources for anybody that is in a period of grief or knows somebody who is going through something that's really challenging. Jody, thank you so much for being with me today and sharing your story. I'm so incredibly grateful to you and your wisdom.
Thank you, Jill. It's been my pleasure, and I appreciate you having me on.
That's it for today's episode of F3, Female Forward Finance. If you found this conversation valuable, be sure to subscribe, leave a review, and more importantly, share it with another woman who could benefit. If you'd like to stay updated with insights, resources, and exclusive content, join my mailing list by emailing me at jill.lloyd@ubs.com. Until next time, keep building, keep growing, and let's make those financial dreams a reality. Onward.
This podcast is presented for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as investment advice or the basis for making any investment decisions. It does not constitute an offer to sell or a solicitation of an offer to buy any specific product or service. UBS does not provide legal or tax advice, and we would recommend listeners to obtain appropriate independent professional advice. Some of the views and opinions expressed may not be those of UBS Group AG or its affiliates. UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. These services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreements and disclosures that we provide about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary. UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS Group AG and is a member of FINRA and SIPC.